I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron's Streetwise podcast on business and investing. Each week we hear from company chiefs and analysts about profound changes facing investors. We've heard from Disney's Bob Iger about the future of movies and theme parks, CVS's Larry Merlo about stores providing more health services, and Ford's Jim Hackett about how the pandemic might change the car business. Subscribe to Barron's Streetwise on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, April 28th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Screen time is a notorious point of dispute between parents and kids, but many who are now working from home say they're relying more and more on YouTube, TV, or video games to keep the kids occupied. How much extra is too much? Our family tech columnist Julie Jargon explores that question with us coming up. But first, these headlines. September, a month for changing leaves, back to school activities, hopefully, and new iPhones. Almost like clockwork, Apple usually unveils new iPhone models in mid-September and begins selling them by the end of the month. To make that happen, August is usually crunch time for production. But that could change this year. We report exclusively that Apple is pushing back its production ramp up by about a month, meaning the four new iPhone models it plans to release, including its first ever 5G phone, could be delayed. The news comes as the coronavirus pandemic has weakened global consumer demand and disrupted manufacturing across Asia. Apple is expected to report its first quarter earnings later this week. And speaking of personal tech, there are yet more new wireless earbuds in town. As of Monday, Google's second-generation Pixel Buds are now available. Here's what our personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen says you need to know.
So Google's new Pixel Buds are their second-generation earbuds, and they're much better than their previous generation. They're very comfortable. The case is a great design and makes a fantastic fidget toy, but they don't have noise cancellation, and so it's really more for people who are running, walking, taking calls on the go, doing chores around their house, not for people who want to drown out their kids or their roommates or their spouses.
Between the new Pixel Buds, Apple's AirPods, and a bunch of others, you might be overwhelmed with choices in the wireless earbud department. Nicole says there's an easy solution. Go with the headphones made by the maker of your phone.
Brand integration is really important because it means that they've done a lot of testing for, you know, fast pairing between the phone and the earbud, but also there are some special software tweaks like both the Google Pixel Buds and Apple AirPods have fast pair. So immediately when you open the case, a little modal pops up on your phone and boom, it's connected and you don't have to go into any settings.
And we might have evidence that straight-to-streaming movies could be lucrative options for major studios. The movie in question is unexpected. It's Universal's Trolls World Tour, the sequel to the animated 2016 hit. Trolls was slated to open on April 10th, right around when theaters were being closed due to the coronavirus. But the movie had already had a massive marketing campaign, so Universal executives decided not to postpone the release. Instead, they sent it straight to digital platforms like iTunes for rent. That move paid off. We report exclusively that in just 3 weeks, Trolls World Tour has racked up nearly 5 million rentals and made Universal close to $77 million. That's more than the original Trolls made during a five-month run in theaters. According to a person familiar with the matter, its performance has convinced execs at Universal that digital releases are worth investing in, and that could diminish the role of theaters even after the pandemic, especially because the studios keep 80% of the digital rental fees compared to just half of the box office sales. Up next, if you're one of the people who's been watching Trolls or other movies with your kids, you might also be one of the people wondering if you should worry about all the extra screen time. We'll ask our tech columnist Julie Jargon about it after the break.
Robotics, artificial intelligence, augmented reality. The future is here. Listen to Tomorrow, Today, with The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything, the podcast that takes you to the front lines of science and tech and shows you what's coming next. Look ahead. What do you hear? The Future of Everything from The Wall Street Journal. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember at the beginning of this whole pandemic when you wrote out a schedule for your family that included hours of reading and cooking and playing games and cleaning together? And as part of those grand plans, you might have even set a screen time limit for yourself or your kids. for sure, for your kids. We're hearing now from many people that those schedules and screen time limits are kind of falling apart. And you might be wondering what the consequences of more time spent watching TV or staring at a computer screen could actually have, especially for your kids. Our family tech columnist, Julie Jargon, has been looking into this problem, and she joins us now to tell us all about it. Hey, Julie, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So you've been talking to some people who did their best, tried to set those screen time limits for their kids. What happened?
Yes, I spoke to some parents and some experts, and I think everybody went into the quarantine situation with high hopes that their kids would follow strict schedules. And when that didn't happen and the realities of working from home and homeschooling caught up with everyone, a lot of parents let the screen time limits kind of go out the door. But now that many of us are into this a month or more, I think a lot of parents have realized that they've, you know, they've just given their kids a lot of extra screen time just in the, you know, for the sake of getting more work done themselves or with older kids. Screen time is often the only way that they can really socialize with their friends now. So, you know, a lot of parents feel badly that their kids aren't going out, hanging out with friends. And so, you know, FaceTiming and texting and playing online video games with their friends is the only way now that a lot of kids can keep up with their friends.
Do we have any numbers on this?
Yeah, there's a national organization called Parents Together, and they surveyed more than 3,000 of their members earlier this month and found that kids have actually doubled the amount of time they've been spending online. So it's, you know, in some cases, it's 6 hours a day now. And in many more cases, it's far more than that, 8 hours a day on devices. And we're not just talking about online school here. That has clearly driven up some of the increased time that kids are spending on screens. But we're talking about a lot of kids spending a great deal of their time on YouTube and TikTok and watching shows on Netflix. So that's got a lot of parents now concerned that they maybe have gone a little bit overboard in relaxing the screen time limits.
So you've been talking to some experts about the impact that this can have on kids. What are they saying?
Well, one clinical psychologist I spoke to said that in order to determine if your child has had a problem with too much screen time, you should really run through a mental health checklist. And, you know, it's not the screens themselves that are inherently bad. It's what those screens are taking away from other aspects of their life. So, for instance, if your children aren't getting enough sleep, that's a red flag right there. They're staying up too late playing video games or texting friends. If they're not getting enough exercise, if they're not eating properly or when they're supposed to be eating, sometimes kids will play video games and they forget about eating. Are they invested in their schoolwork? And are they spending enough face-to-face time with their families? So those are all sort of key points that you can look at to determine if this has really gotten, you know, out of hand.
And what do they recommend you doing if you feel like it has gotten out of hand, or how to keep the screen time in check?
Yeah, a lot of experts advise parents to go back to those schedules that we all started out with when this began. And obviously the schedules don't always go, you know, the way they should or the way we hope they do. But providing a structure is what really helps kids get their screen time under control. So whatever your schedule might look like, there's no right or wrong way to develop it. But screens are kind of the default when there is no structure. So if you can build in limited screen time, you know, an hour or two during in the schedule after they complete their online classwork, maybe an hour when you're cooking dinner to give everyone a little breather, maybe family, you know, movie time after dinner, just so that kids kind of know when the screen time is supposed to be, how long it's supposed to last, so that there are still some limits, you know, a little bit of freedom, but some limits and structure built into it.
The dependence on screens isn't just a kid's problem. I think a lot of us are seeing our screen time reports on our phones and devices pop up and be a lot more than we're used to. Do these guidelines apply to adults too?
I think you can certainly apply these to yourself as well. Another bit of good advice, which I think is probably helpful for adults to the extent possible, is to keep your school or your work devices and spaces separate from your entertainment ones. So if you have a dedicated laptop for work or for your children to use for school, have that dedicated only to school or work, and, you know, keep the other fun stuff to the iPad or the phone or some other, you know, gaming console, and have a designated space if possible. I mean, you know, if you're stuck in a small apartment in New York, you may not have the luxury of space, but if you can have, you know, a dedicated area where you're working and where your kids are doing their work, which experts say should be in a central location like the kitchen or the dining room, there's less temptation to goof off and do other things than if they're upstairs in their bedroom with the door closed, where you think they're doing homework, but they're really watching YouTube.
And then we're also showing them how we can be responsible with screens as well and not be on our screens all the time. Our family tech columnist, Julie Jargon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, before we go, we are still taking your work from home tech stories and questions. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back with us on Friday to share her favorite tips and solutions. You can call us and leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.